this is a fairy tale great story. And then you come back for act two, you're like, this is a completely different show.
And I was like, this is the highest form of theater. It is like everyone on that stage is such a professional.
The lyrics are one thing, but there's a whole other story being told just with the instrumental of this show.
I don't know, the crafting of this story is so good.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're talking all about Into the Woods. This is also our 101st episode, or I guess technically 102nd episode.
So, our Dalmatian episode, if you will.
Oh, actually, what did I see? I just saw someone's doing 101 Dalmatian collab. It might be Kate Spade. This is very...
Yeah. Yeah, I think they do have a 101 Dalmatians. Yeah. Coach might also have a 101.
Yeah. So that's Spade for sure. Our new branding is Dalmatians. Also, I just realized my dishwasher is currently going. You know what? We're just going to keep it. So if you hear any like gurgling, it's the dishwasher that's going.
It's fine.
So in today's episode, we're talking about Into the Woods because we felt that we needed to get this out before this current Broadway revival production closes, which is, I believe, the first week of January, mid...
January 8th? January 8th?
Yeah, around that time. Right? Now, I do know that on their website and also their Twitter bio, it used to say final extension, and they did get rid of the word final, but I think it's the final extension this time.
I agree with you, especially, I think we would have heard something by now. It's coming up pretty quickly. I can see a national tour happening, but I think on Broadway, this will be the end of this production.
Also, something's going into the St. James, and I'm trying to look up what that is.
Play?
Is it Life of Pi?
I thought Life of Pi was going to the Broadway.
It's also not going for a while. Hang on. I feel like this is decently important. I need to figure this out. New York, New York is going
to
the St. James.
Right.
In March. So if it were to extend, the longest it could extend is probably to the end of January for like theater turnover. And because that seems like too close, they're just going to end it January.
Especially
8th. So
January, February is kind of a dead season in general.
Yeah.
So why put the money in when your audience is probably not there? So tragically, it will be closing. Not tragically. This was always meant to be a limited run, but
exactly.
Sad to see it go.
So if you are listening to this episode on episode release date, you still have a few weeks to go see Into the Woods. So if you're in the New York area, go see Into the Woods. Also, those tickets are readily available on TKTS, especially that like week-ish in January. Although, who knows, because I'm sure like Christmas will be very busy for Into the Woods. But like post-Christmas, when things start to like die down, as Steph was saying, like it's probably a good time to go see it. They just announced a rush policy at the theater, and you could do what I did, I think, is like roll up to the theater if there's no rush tickets that day just to see if there's any cheaper tickets. It's also pretty readily available on SeatGeek right now. So there's lots of ways to see the show.
Unlike when I saw it.
I know.
And
I think about this like regularly of how hard it was to see it when you saw it versus how easy it was to see it when I saw
it. Sure. I saw it pretty early-ish in the run. I went end of July this past summer. And basically the only reason we really got in is because I entered my entire family. Well, me and my parents were going to New York. I entered us all into the lottery and my dad won. And he texted me and he's like, I won this lottery. And I'm like, buy the tickets. Buy them.
Yeah.
So we had two tickets and we were three people. So we had to buy a single ticket somewhere else, which was at that time $199. And there were only like two or three single tickets when we were at the box office. We went that day just to kind of see what was available. So
I also think at that point when you were there, because I remember leading up to you going to New York, we were looking at the boards to see if they were on, and it was not on the boards at the time.
It was very, very in demand at that time. It was pretty early. It had that original Broadway cast still.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Sarah Bareilles had a lot to do with those ticket sales.
Absolutely. Even though
she left. I know.
Even though the week I was there, she was out sick, which is fine. Like, obviously I missed her. I wish I'd seen her, but I'll shout out Mary-Kate Moore. I saved the slip. Mary-Kate Moore, who played the baker's wife the night I saw it, was stunning, gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Like, no, absolutely zero complaints about her. But I was sad to miss Sarah.
Yeah. But it did seem as soon as Sarah left, even though, like, Stephanie J. Block is who she is, it's just not the same kind of crowd of people that are, like, flocking to the theater. So it did become more readily available, which is great for the general population to be able to see this show. Absolutely. So before we deep dive into this most recent Broadway revival, what did you know about Into the Woods before seeing it?
So if we bring us back, let's say, 10-ish years, the answer to this question would be not much, honestly.
Yeah.
Truly not much at all. Before this live production on Broadway, I'd never seen a production of Into the Woods before. And even still, I'd only really listened to a few of the songs here and there. I did see the movie, which I want to talk about later. But I did
see... Which was in 2014, right?
2014, yes. I saw the movie in theaters.
We'll save it.
But I have seen the movie, so I guess I had seen that full production of it there. But beyond that, like, the movie did not inspire me to go and, like, seek out the rest of the cast recording. Everyone knows, like, I'm a big Sondheim fan, but this was kind of, like, a bit of a blind spot for me. And so I knew some of the songs, like, the famous songs, but I wouldn't say I was, like, consistently listening to it all the time. So I had, I guess I would say, passing familiarity with Into the Woods before I saw it on Broadway. What about you, Tara?
I would say, like, pretty similar. The only other thing is, at the time when I was in high school, I don't even know what year this would have been. I don't remember if I was in grade 11 or 12, but, like, the 2 years younger than me and the year younger than me was putting on, like, an Into the Woods Junior version, which was, like, not at our theater that was attached to the school, but, like, in our cafeteria. It was, like, a very, very, very small production. And I just learned today that the Into the Woods Junior is licensed, that it's only the first act, and it's not even the full first act. They take out, like, all the scary parts, basically, which is comedy.
Sure. So I can imagine they're not leaving in Cinderella's stepsister's eyes getting gouged out, you know? I can imagine that's not.
Definitely not.
Or their toes getting cut off or whatever.
Exactly. So after seeing, like, that version of Into the Woods in high school, it turns out that it's not anything that Into the Woods actually is. I had also seen the movie. I don't think I saw it in theaters. I think I watched it at home. But same thing, it didn't lead me to, like, listen to that cast recording after seeing it. And then I actually don't think it was really until 2020 when we did, or was it last year, January, when we were on the original cast podcast?
Yeah, I think it was Sondheim. January 2021.
Yeah. That I started to, like, read more about it because we wanted to, like, into that episode. But what's interesting about that is that, like, the Six by Sondheim, the, like, other documentary that I watched, and, like, a couple things that I read, they don't really talk about Into the Woods very much. It's, like,
the
kind
Six
of
by
something...
Sondheim ignores Into the Woods almost completely. Just, like, maybe a little, like, Joanna Gleason. But other than that, really nothing.
So I think I had only learned, like, a couple more pieces of information, but it was so interesting because then, like, the following year when it was announced that that Into the Woods was being revived at New York City Center and, like, everybody was so excited for it, I felt like, oh, this is such a show that, like, it's fun for sure. The bringing together all of these different, like, Grimm's fairy tales is very fun, but why does everybody love it so much? And until I saw it, I feel like I now understand why everyone loves it so much.
Yes, we have to get into the movie, but I think the movie did it a real disservice if it was a lot of people's introduction to Into the Woods. It really, I think, like, took out the heart of the entire story, the movie. And so it did not entice me or you, or I'm sure many other people, to, like, delve further into it the way other movie adaptations have, let's say.
I mean, it features one of our favorite actors of all time, so that's maybe the main reason why it didn't entice me. I mean, like, James Corden plays the baker in this. He's, as I just said, our favorite actor of all time. Emily Blunt is Baker's wife. We have, like, Anna Kendrick playing Cinderella, Meryl Streep as the witch, Christine Baranski as Cinderella's stepmother. Who is Jack? I kind of feel like a no-name.
The
was
kid
Jack.
From Gavroche, the Gavroche from Les Mis. The Les Mis movie. Yeah.
That kid was actually great. Maybe the highlight.
Do you remember? Do you remember the Little Red was supposed to be played by Sophia Grace from Ellen?
Ellen.
And then she didn't end up doing it.
It was
obviously.
Played by
and
the
it was
girl.
Like, it was like Lilla Crawford who had been Annie on Broadway.
Yeah.
I think that was like a last minute replacement because it was supposed to be the girl from Ellen.
And then obviously, iconically, Chris Evans and what's
Chris
the other
Pine.
Guy's name?
Chris Pine.
Well, sorry,
and Billy
Chris
Magnuson.
Pine, not Chris Evans.
How
and Billy
dare
Magnuson
you?
As Rapunzel's prince and
Cinderella's
Prince Charming,
prince.
I guess is his name.
Yeah.
Well, he's technically Prince Charming, right? Yeah. So the movie, I also think making it a Disney movie maybe didn't help because they
I think it was Disneyfied.
Took out some of those moments. I mean, they still did like the stepsisters getting their eyes, whatever, but.
Did they?
Because they wear glasses at one point, but they probably don't explicitly say it like they do in the musical.
Like Rapunzel's story ends kind of like tragically in the musical. And then, but her and her prince get to kind of ride off into the sunset in the movie. They really, like, I think took out everything about Into the Woods that makes it interesting in the movie, that makes it a compelling story. And they just focused on the fairy tale part and not on the, like, commentary part. The whole reason why this musical was written was, like, taken out of the movie adaptation. It's very odd.
Yeah, but I honestly think that that's probably, like, 100% due to it being
a Disney
movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was directed by Rob Marshall. I don't know. They also, like, kind of recently just, like, put the sing-along version on Disney Plus, and I feel like because the Broadway show has been doing so well, they kind of want people to, like, rediscover this movie. So I don't know. See it for yourself and whatever you think is, I don't know. I wouldn't, like, recommend to watch it, and if anyone has seen it, you probably, like, know exactly what we're talking about.
I've never watched it, but there is a filmed version of the, I believe, like, original Broadway production.
I've never watched it.
I've never seen it. But I think so many people have fond memories of that version, and I think if you want to see a filmed version, that's the one I would recommend, because it kind of maintains that original direction, original staging, and kind of the original intention of what it was, or if you can get to see this production. But yeah, the movie is not something I would recommend to anyone.
No. For anyone that doesn't know, do you want to give us, like, a 30-second synopsis of
Into the Woods? Okay. So, Into the Woods is about a baker and his wife who are unable to have a child, and that's their deepest wish, to have a child. So, it's because a curse has been put on their family by this witch who lives next door, and she says, to break the curse, you have to get me these four objects. The cow as white as milk, the slipper as pure as gold, the hair as golden as corn.
Yellow.
Hair as yellow as corn. The hair as yellow as corn. And the
cape as red as blood.
The cape as red as blood. Okay. The cape as red as blood. So that brings us to these all other fairy tale stories. So the cow is obviously from Jack and the Beanstalk. The hair is from Rapunzel. The slipper is from Cinderella. And the cape is from Little Red Riding Hood. So this kind of, like, normal everyday couple who are original characters for this musical are forced to, like, delve into this fairy tale world to collect these objects in order to have to break the curse and to have a child. So that's act one, which ends with happily ever after. But then act two is the what happens after happily ever after. What happens when you're forced to face the consequences of the actions that you did while trying to achieve your happily ever after, and having to reckon with the consequences and the impact it had on other people and on yourself, and what happens after, and reckoning with, oh, is happily ever after always such a good idea?
Right?
Is that what you would go with?
Yeah, that's pretty good. I think a lot of people also, like, if you don't know about Into the Woods and you're watching it for the first time and you're like sitting along for the ride, you're like, oh, this is a fairy tale, great story. And then you come back for Act 2, you're like, this is a completely different show. And this is not like the first time that Sondheim has done this. Obviously, we've talked about this previously with Sunday in the Park with George, how Act 1 right. and Act 2 are almost like completely different shows.
They're like two pieces in conversation with each other almost. Like they're different, but they're so clearly like tied together. They refer back to each other so often.
I actually think that Into the Woods Act 2 refers more back to Act 1 than I would say Sunday does.
Sure, it's kind of like a continuation, whereas Sunday is like quite different. Like, but it's like very clear, like in conversation.
Sometimes you're like, what is happening in Act 2 of Sunday in the Park with George? I'm not sure.
Sunday in the Park with George Act 2 is very interesting because it's just... It is interesting. It's about, like, it is about what is the cost of, like, creating art, or, like, what is the cost of creating art, and kind of Act 1 is about if you're very good at it, and if Act 2 is what if you're not very good at it, you know? Like...
Yes.
Yeah. And, yeah. And like the living up to expectations of Act 2, and whether they're self-imposed or imposed by expectations of other people, like being, let's say, like, the great-great-grandchild, allegedly, of George Seurat. That he says he is. Definitely like they're a little bit much farther apart, but they're kind of, I see like parallels in that you tell a story, like a kind of a self-contained story in Act 1, and then Act 2 is kind of like dismantling that story.
Mm-hmm. It also is one of those things that like this show is very smart. The lyrics are very intentional, which I think we'll get into more when we talk about songs. And like the composition of the songs is very intentional. So when you do get into that second half, there are moments to draw back on from the first half because like there's a motif of music that sounds the same, but now it's like composed in a different way. But you can still like pull those things out. When you saw this Broadway production, I mean, we kind of like briefly touched on this. After you came back from New York, and same with me. But like, what did you think of as a whole of the revival?
When I was in the audience for this, I was very excited to see this because I've been hearing such amazing things. The cast was great, kind of a limited run, like very excited. It was the hot show of the moment. And I was very excited to see it. And then I was in the theater and it started and I was like, this is art. Like the moment that I always think of is at the end of Act 1 when they're singing Ever After, and they're kind of in like the choreography. It's very simple choreography. The band is on stage, like extremely simple staging for this production. And they're like three groups of each other, like all close together, and they're singing like in unison and they're moving around each other. And I was like, this is the highest form of theater. It is like everyone on that stage is such a professional. They are like doing their jobs and they are so good at it. They're so competent. And so you don't always feel that way when you're in the theater. Like you're feeling like lots of emotions, but watching this, I was like, this like is so well put together. Every piece of this is so well thought out and put together. And the talent bringing it to life on stage is so good. And so when they're doing this, like, it's not even intricate. It's very simple. Like three groups kind of moving around each other, kind of like singing. And I was like, this is the highest form of theater. This like, it does not get better than this. Like nothing is better than this. And it's so simple. It's just like movement of bodies. There's no set changes. The band is on stage. It's so sparse and it's just left up to the artists, the performers to deliver in that moment. And they are delivering. And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't even say that, like, is Into the Woods, like, one of the best shows I've ever seen? No. But this version, it felt like it was advertised as such a, like, prestigious event, I would say. Because, like, the highest of caliber actors on that stage, this is such a, like, I don't know, the way, because it was a City Center transfer, I would consider, like, City Center projects also being like very prestigious events, all of that. But like
that's why they're able to get such good casting.
Exactly. But like when you think of something being prestigious, you're like, okay, this could either be like so good and amazing, or it's like so high class that it's almost like snobby and like bad. And it's not that. It is like the highest caliber of are the most talented people working on that stage. And as you said, like, there's not that much going on that stage. So you're not being, like, there's nothing to throw you off as in, like, set pieces to distract you from whatever's happening. Sure, there's costumes. They're very, like, almost simple in a way. I don't know.
They're not doing major costume changes. They're kind of just
everyone's kind of like the whole show. Wearing the same thing the whole time. Like, no one's wearing a wig. It's all of their, like, natural hair. Everyone is just, like, I don't know. There's so much to this show that I think sometimes we complain when things are, like, simple because it doesn't seem enough. But if this had more than what it did, I'm not sure it would be as good as it is.
No, I think the simplicity is what's great about it. You know, like Cinderella, right? She keeps falling down the stairs every time. And there's no big set piece. There's no big castle. It's all kind of left up to, when I saw it, was Philippa Sue's performance and her, like, tumbling down those stairs and giving you, with just her acting, just her alone doing that performance, painting out this entire world that she's running away from this palace, that she's, you know, tumbling away, running away from this prince, and everything is in the performance of the actors. Mm-hmm. Everything is kind of left up to that. And so many times when, you know, it's hard, sometimes when things are simple and you left feeling kind of disappointed, it's because maybe enough wasn't done in the writing or in the acting or in the other things. Like, it's just not enough all around. Whereas this, like, the simplicity of the staging allows the spotlight to be shone on the stunning performances and staging and music and writing that is present in this show that's not always present in other shows.
Well, it's also interesting, too, because we're dealing with fairy tales here, which I think with fairy tales, you can almost give, like, an over-the-top kind of performance. And I didn't feel that way from anybody in this. It almost felt like an effortless performance. I said this when I talked about it, like, a few months ago, but there are moments I'm like, these people aren't acting. They're just, like, living this life, which is obviously saying that they're a great actor and that they're making me feel that way. Like, that's something that they're doing through delivering these lines in the script. But sometimes it doesn't always feel effortless. And I really think that that's, one, a lot to do with the writing in this show, and two, the highest caliber of talent that they're putting on this stage. Like, these are the best of the best of Broadway in most cases. And I don't know, it just felt like such a treat to be there and, like, lucky to be in the room, if that makes sense.
And also, I think the simplicity, like, gives the actors room to breathe, play, to perform.
Yeah.
You know, when you know, we love a big set change, but, you know, when there's these big set pieces coming in and out, huge choreography, you know, you're thinking about, okay, I have to move here. I have to be here. I can't be hit in the head by a giant set piece. I have to make sure I'm in this exact right spot. For this, I can't take an extra moment or an extra beat here because there's 7 million moving pieces that need to keep going. Whereas there's a lot of moving pieces in this, but, you know, they have the time to just, as, like, performers, like, take a beat, take a breath, because you're not in collaboration with all these electronic things or technology. It's just, like, it's a much more, like, human and a much more almost even traditional way of theater, as opposed to the more modern way, which is a lot more technology, a lot more bombast, that does impact the performance. Like, the performance is not distracted by those other elements. They have the room and they have the time and they have the ability to, like, let this acting breathe because they don't have to focus on 7 million technical things as well.
It's interesting to say that, and we talked about this, like, a few months ago, that, like, literally everybody was doing Into the Woods this year, it felt like. And I almost wish that we had seen another Into the Woods production to not, like, compare it in terms of, like, level of talent,
sure,
because there's literally no comparison, but just to see what the staging would have been like in a different version of the show. I'm thinking about right now, because I've seen a lot of, like, the artwork on Twitter, but I know that there's an Into the Woods that's playing in the UK right now, and it looks like it's very over the top. There's, like, a lot of set, a lot of costume. And I do wonder if that, like, would change the way that the story is told. I don't know, because the only other time that I've seen this is the movie, which is not, like, comparable to that, to this stripped back version that we saw.
No, not at all. Yes, I know. I think, you know, this is something we actually did talk about with Patrick Flynn when we were on the original cast of the movies. But the thing about Sondheim is that because none of his shows lasted an extremely long time on Broadway, there have been, like, licensing went out so much quicker, and so many more people have been able to do productions of his shows than, let's say, like, A Phantom of the Opera, which there is only one, I guess there's two, but there is only one production. There is only one way to see the show, whereas because Stephen Sondheim is licensable, so many different directors and theater companies have been able to put their stamp on it. And so this is, like, one stamp. And I also think it's significant to say this is the first, like, major Sondheim revival that took place after his death that was staged without his input versus, let's say, like, a company which was staged, or even, like, the most recent West Side Story revival, the short-lived one. Like, he had input. He was in rehearsal rooms for both of those, whereas this is, like, the first one post Sondheim put on. But that the plays and the musicals that he's written, like, the stories that he's told, have been able to have their stamp and have different versions of it be told by so many people, which includes a movie, which we don't think is a successful retelling, but is still, like, important in that it allows room for other ways. Yes, there was a Talk Is Free production last fall, that was at the Winter Garden that we didn't end up going to. It was pandemic times, you know.
It also ended up having a shorter run than originally expected because of the pandemic. But we were going to go to it. There was also another one that was... wasn't there one that was happening, like, legitimately outside? I swear there was.
It was the same production. So they did it outside.
In the summer?
And then they... Yes. And then they moved it to... They were gonna
it wasn't in Toronto.
Garden. Yeah. It wasn't, like, easily get-to-able for us.
Outskirts. Yeah, yeah.
And then they were doing it at the... Winter Garden Elgin. The original concept was to, like, do the first half downstairs and the second half there. So it's, like, the last stacked theaters remaining in the world. So the first half downstairs, and then everybody was going to move upstairs to see it. But then because of the pandemic, like, oh, we can't have people, like, moving a bunch during the show.
Yeah, so the concept was changed.
So they're like, oh, we're just going to stay in one place. And then it just, the pandemic became very more stressful. Yeah. So we didn't end up going to that, which is a big regret because, like, now having seen this version, I'm like, I want to see every single person's interpretation of this show. I want to see what
true.
They, I want to see what they think is important. I want to see what they highlight or what is less important. I want to see how they stage this, you know, what they, how the music is arranged. I want to see different people's interpretations of these, like, beautiful lyrics, these rhymes. Like, I need to see a million people do these songs.
Yeah, because also for, like, the characterizations, I think it's interesting that, like, you and I both thought that the best character in this show is Cinderella, and I don't know that a different version would make me feel the same way. Like, maybe I would love, like, the baker. I don't know. Like, there was something about this specific interpretation of Cinderella, because we both saw different people. You saw Philippa Sue, I saw Krista Rodriguez, and now it's Danae Benton, who's currently playing it on Broadway.
Yeah.
She did the City Center originally. But... yeah, it's just, like, interesting to know, and we won't know until we see it again. Hopefully we get the chance to, like, see it again, like, what character stands out to you. I think it's interesting specifically to talk about the witch, because to me, and this has nothing to do with Montego Glover or Patina Miller, because they are both, like, extremely...
Who did you see?
Montego Glover.
I saw Patina Miller.
And currently it's Joaquina Calucango, who stepped in to play the witch. Yeah, Tony Award winning for Paradise Square, which there is still so much drama happening with Paradise Square. So happy that Joaquina is getting her chance to be in a show that, like, everyone is running to buy tickets to see. That's great for her. But I didn't like the interpretation of the witch in this version.
I absolutely agree. I felt like the interpretation of the witch in this production was, like, the weakest element of it.
And it's so weird because when you cast someone like Patina, someone like Montego, someone like Joaquina, who have, like, powerhouse vocals.
Oh, the vocals. The vocals were there. The vocals were there.
But there's something that, and I don't know if it had to do with, like, maybe this was a bit of, it was too simplistic for that character. That there are, I don't know, like, to me, and again, don't like this movie. I also am not, like, the biggest fan of Meryl Streep, but, like, Meryl Streep as the witch was great. It was so different to what we
saw. She brought the gravitas to the witch, I feel. Maybe this witch is too young.
I don't know what it was. I can't, like, pinpoint because I have nothing to, like, properly compare it to.
I agree. When I left, I was like, I don't know if I love this interpretation of the witch. I felt the exact same way leaving. Maybe it's the costuming. like the purple dress. I wasn't crazy about the purple dress.
It might have also been like a direction choice in line delivery that sometimes I wasn't super into, where I felt the complete opposite about Little Red, who I think that sometimes Little Red could be like an annoying character, but whatever direction was given, Little Red leaned into that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was a line delivery in that sense.
Yes, I sat with my parents. They sat in the lottery seats in the balcony, and I sat in the orchestra by myself. and so I saw my parents at intermission. I was like, what do you think? And my mom was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, this is so good. This is amazing. And I was like, hey, what characters do you like? She's like, oh, Little Red is so funny. And I actually want to, I think a big part of why Little Red worked in this production, instead of being annoying, as she sometimes is an adult was cast. An adult played Little Red and Jack. And so even the, like, weirdly, like, I know Little Red as a child, even the, like, weirdly, like, sexual overtones of the wolf, like, it is still creepy, but having it be an adult playing her, I think helped a little with the creep factor. Like, he's meant to be creepy, but I think it, like, helped. Having her be that, have that attitude, have that sassiness, being played by an adult, I think really worked well for it. Even Jack being played by an adult.
I loved Jack in this.
Oh, that's amazing.
Like another, I know, I don't have the playbill, but I thought that, again, like that was a characterization.
Cole Thompson played Jack. He was great. He was wonderful.
Like, he really leaned into whatever direction was given, where, I don't know, it's so interesting, because then you think of like the baker and the baker's wife, and for me, like, married couple, Stephanie J. Block, Sebastian Arcellus, I was like, oh, they're literally just like playing themselves. So that was fine to me, because that, to me, the interpretation of the baker and the baker's wife is that they are just like normal everyday people. So this like 100% makes sense.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's so interesting to like pick and choose like all of these characters and think about like their characteristics. And I would really love to see another version of this show to be able to compare it one day. I don't know. Maybe we should watch the like original Broadway cast tape.
We definitely should
recording with like Bernadette Peters and Joanna Gleason.
Absolutely should. Remember, was it like 2009? Maybe it was earlier. There was the the Central Park production with like Amy Adams, and yes, Glenn Close was the voice of the giant, which is random.
Amazing.
Lots of people were in that as well.
Was it 2019 or 2018? The Hollywood Bowl with. Sutton Foster, his baker's wife, Skylar Astin.
Was
he the baker? The baker. No.
He was the baker. Yeah, he was the baker. I think that's a bit of a miscast, in my opinion. A little young. Well, he's a little young, in my opinion.
I'm trying to think who else was in that cast. I can't think of... Actually, I have the Wikipedia page open.
Was Gavin Creel in it?
I mean, if he wasn't, he should have been.
Gavin Creel was the Cinderella's Prince.
I'm looking it up. Other productions... Oh, wow. I, on here is the Israeli premiere of the musical in 2016 in Tel Aviv.
Ah!
Interesting.
In English?
I don't know. The Hollywood Bowl was Skylar Astin as Baker, Sutton Foster as Baker's wife, Sierra Boggess as Cinderella. That's correct casting. Sure. You know who is Jack? Gayton from...
Right. I was like, yes. I was picturing him as Jack at one point.
I know it wasn't. It wasn't Gavin Creel. It was Cheyenne Jackson. Swear.
Oh, sure.
Same.
Right. Correct. Because then he came in for like 10 days to do it.
I'm trying to think of like other notable. Oh, Hayley Kilgore was Rapunzel. Who's Cinderella? Oh, Sierra Boggess, I said. And then Whoopi Goldberg was the voice of the giant.
Right. She doesn't need to leave her house for that.
Patina was the witch at the Hollywood Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah.
But those ones are... I would actually probably say that version is... most similar to this version, because Hollywood Bowl does very simplistic staging.
Minimalist staging, yes.
Almost like a concert. Like this sometimes felt like almost a concert. I also want to point
because the band was on stage. Because the band was on stage, like the orchestra.
So the original production of Into the Woods, the Broadway production, opened in 1987 on Broadway with, as we said, Bernadette Peters, Joanna Gleason. Was Chip Zion in that cast? I feel like he was.
He was the baker.
So it won 3 Tony Awards that year: Best Score, Best Book, and Best Actress in a Musical for Joanna Gleason. But what did it lose to?
Best Musical. What did it lose
to? Phantom of the Opera. was the year that Phantom of the Opera won, like, everything else that was there. And as we know, Phantom just extended again. So.
Oh, my God. I can't even talk about Phantom of the Opera. You guys went for your farewell visit. It's not even going to close. This has got to be your farewell visit. I mean, a marketing tactic. It's a marketing tactic. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
No, but, like, truly to speak on that for 1 second, what a way to boost your ticket sales is to do that. That it's show has been Cher sold going out every giving, single day.
It's giving Cher on her 20th farewell tour, to be honest.
Like, for, I don't know how many years TKTS has been open, but however many years TKTS has been open, the Phantom of the Opera has been on there every day, except for the last 2.5 months. Crazy. Crazy.
Absolutely. No, it is
so
crazy.
So smart. Congrats to the marketing team. You really did that.
Congrats to the marketing team. Congrats to Cameron McIntosh, I guess, for this. you know who we haven't discussed today in this episode at all? We haven't even said his name.
Who?
Milky White.
Oh, I know. Because I feel like it was a whole section waiting to happen.
I feel like we cannot go much longer without acknowledging the absolute genius that is Kennedy Kanagawa, serving absolutely everything as Milky White. I mean, that keeps bringing us back to the simplicity of this production. A lot of puppetry happening in this production, and there are few performers who are really just puppetry, like operating puppets.
You know that Kennedy is not even a puppeteer? Like, he learned this for this.
This for this. No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And this is a Broadway debut, which is, like, super exciting.
Yeah.
Yes, so he plays Milky White. He also appears at other moments in the show, puppeting different things. There's birds and the boots.
The giant boots,
Yeah. I love the way they did the boots, the giant's boots. But the way Kennedy and Milky White, him and this puppet, are collaborating, are performing together, is stunning. It's amazing. It's like just the way he moves the puppet and the way his facial expressions, his face is kind of creating the face and the emotions of this cow puppet. Mm-hmm. It's just absolutely amazing. And the biggest laugh that my entire theater got was when Milky White dies.
Oh, yeah.
And he just goes like...
Yeah. It's an iconic moment. Like, and also, to speak to that, like, simplicity, as you were saying, this is not like, you can look up the Milky White puppets from, like, previous productions of Into the Woods, and you'll see everything that's going on. It's like a deconstructed, like, paper mache cow, basically.
It's see-through. I think there's, like, a Tumblr account that is, like, dedicated? Community Theater Milky White. I need to find this.
Wow.
It might be Community Theater Beast. Oh. From Beauty and the Beast, but community, there's got to be a Community Theater Milky White.
I did
because
see
it's so funny.
The
what other productions do?
The 2022 London one that's currently on. Theirs is kind of similar facially looking, but more of a body than this one because this one's literally just like deconstructed cardboard box.
This one's giving Warhorse to me,
kind of, but like more fragile because the Warhorse ones were like actually built of whatever material. This is literal cardboard.
This cow was looking emaciated on purpose, but this cow's looking emaciated. Yeah. Like a skeleton, basically. It's like a cow skeleton.
It's got the face proper, but the body is like skeleton.
Yeah, and then because of that, the way it moves is like very fluid. It's beautiful. Yeah, like that's just like another element of what this production of Into the Woods does so well. Is like allowing you to see the strings. Like I love, like, because this show in general is quite meta and like self-referential in that, you know, you're like reading a story, you know, it's not like they're not trying to convince you that this is real, like you're becoming a participant in this story that you're being told. Being able to see the strings, like the literal puppet strings for this puppet, I think adds to the storytelling element as opposed to takes away from it.
Yeah, it's the same thing with, like, again, little to no set, but there are some trees, but you can see how they how they hang and, like, the strings that are holding it together. But I do agree. I think it's pretty intentional for this version of the show.
Yeah. Even the way, at the end of Act 1, the beanstalk growing, it is the flimsiest looking beanstalk
I've ever seen. Oh, my God. It's community theater.
It's paper. It is community theater, but...
Great.
Like... in a way that works. Like, sometimes when things look too expensive, it takes away. You want it to look kind of flat.
Yeah.
Like, it works. It works for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Absolutely great. Okay, yeah, I love all the puppets.
Let's talk about music, because I do think that music is, like, just as important to scripting, if not more important to scripting in this show. I did watch, there's a video on YouTube, it's an hour long, of Stephen Sondheim and James Lapine talking about the score of Into the Woods, and I specifically want to talk about the opening number, which is 12 or 13 minutes, quite a long opening number. And Sondheim was talking about the fact that the show starts with the narrator. Oh my God, sorry. Let's shout out him. You have your program.
Have my program. Oh my goodness. The narrator, absolutely amazing. A star. He was
the narrator slash the like mysterious man.
Mysterious man. Where is his name? David Patrick Kelly. Absolutely amazing.
A true star.
So funny. So funny.
So he starts the show with Once Upon a Time, and...
Once Upon a Time.
Yeah. Boom. And Sondheim was saying that like, piano note, because normally when you are thinking of, like, a Once Upon a Time, he said you would hear, like, Once Upon a Time, there was a little girl. Once Upon a Time, there was a this. It's like, Once Upon a Time, there was a that.
Yeah.
So it just, like, leads you, weaves you into the story, whereas for this, it's Once Upon a Time... piano note, and he said, I wanted to, like, wake up the audience to surprise them to know that, like, this is what's going to happen the whole way through. We are not about to see a normal fairy tale. I want you to join on this journey the whole way through and then get into, like, all of those different motifs of the show.
Once upon a time,
I wish
in a far-off kingdom,
more than anything,
lived a young maid,
more than life,
a sad young lad,
more than jewels,
I wish,
and a childless baker,
more than life,
I wish,
with his wife,
more than anything,
more than the moon,
I wish,
the king is giving a festival,
more than life,
I wish,
I wish to go to the festival,
more than riches,
and the bull,
I wish my cow would give us some milk,
more than anything,
I wish we had a child,
please, I want a child,
please,
I wish to go to the festival,
I wish we might have a child,
I wish.
He also talked a lot about the I wish, moment, which happens many times throughout the show.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
every character has their own wish.
Yeah. But the specific piano notes of that are kind of like in a major key, because we only get to the minor key when, like, the witch comes around, or mostly in, like, act two when, like, the main motif changes and it sounds more like sinister,
also,
because it's about death more in the second,
or like,
act.
These wishes have come true, but they're not exactly what you seemed. So, like, and they're in the major key when you're happy about it, and they're in the minor key when you're like, oh, maybe I have regret about this.
Yeah. So even just listening to him talk about, like, and this was the opening number, which I don't know if the opening number was done first in this case. But I couldn't imagine it not being done first with the story that, like, he was telling just of this first song, and how, like, him and James Lapine really worked on all of this together as such a, like, collaborative process. Because you do really go off into, like, however many characters, like, six different directions in that opening number, so that you're slowly introduced to everybody about, okay, this is what you're about to see for the next however many minutes. Until you're not about to see it for the next however many minutes. So they kind of do, like, lead you on a journey to just, like, dump you and leave you there thinking towards the end. So I don't know. I think musically it's, like, obviously very smart. And to think that, like, the lyrics are one thing, but there's a whole other story being told just with the instrumental of this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As someone who, like, doesn't have a music background, like, what the music is doing for most of the time in a musical is almost unconscious to me. Like, I don't... When you say major and minor key, like, I understand what you're saying, but I don't really understand what you're saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So it, the way that it translates, like, for someone who doesn't know what that means, but it still works on me. You know what I mean?
No, it's, no,
still,
it's true.
Like, these musical tricks that they're employing, they convey these emotions without the audience even being aware of what's going on. It's so cleverly written and put together and like puzzle pieced together. Everything is so intentional, everything he does.
There's also the motif all the way through of the, like, stay with me. They're like, dun, 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 and then it changes like later in the show. But it's like, when you think about it, and if you like take that out of the rest of the song, you're like, oh, that's only like a few notes being played like back to back to back, but they sound so like thematic. And as soon as you hear that, you're like, oh, I kind of know what's about to come next. I know who's about to enter. I know what we're about to see. So
I don't know. We love a theme.
Like, the instrumental, the orchestrations are really, really next level in this show. I also wanted to point out, I was reading an article this morning on Playbill. It was actually written by Seth Rudetsky, and it was, he was talking to Rob McClure about Sondheim in general, and then, I don't know, I think it was something about Sweeney Todd, but then it ended that Rob McClure told Stephen Sondheim that his favorite lyric from Moments in the Woods, which is actually funny because I was talking to my friend Alex about this the other day at work, is the, like, section of... must it all be either less or more, either plain or grand? Is it always or? Is it never and? And that's what woods are for, for those moments in the woods. And Sondheim said that that's what woods are for is meant to be, that's what W-O-U-L-D-S are for, not
because he's just saying woods and coulds. Like, yeah. Wow.
So.
Wow, should.
Wow. You, when you hear that song... you can think of it either way, because then Rob McClure's response back was, well, in the lyrics, it's spelled W-O-O-D-S. And Sondheim's response back was, this is like a trick for the audience when they hear it. They can choose whatever... they can choose whichever way they want to hear those lyrics in their mind. And I was like, this is so smart, because when you change literally two letters or...
Yeah.
When you change two letters in, or add two letters into a word, it can completely change the entire meaning of a verse of lyrics. And, like, literally only one man would be able to do that, you know?
One peculiar passing moment. Must it all be either less or more, either plain or grand? Is it always or? Is it never and? That's what woods are for those moments in the woods. Oh, if life were made of moments, even now and then a bad one. But if life were only moments...
I know. So obviously we've talked about my Stephen Sondheim books. This is the second one. Look, I Made a Hat. Kind of, and it deals with his, I believe the first musical in here is sorry, I just want to know what the first musical is in here. Sunday in the Park with George. So it deals with Sunday in the Park with George and after, whereas the first book is everything kind of before Sunday in the Park with George. So this is kind of his like later era moment. So yeah, so looking at those lyrics in here, it does say woods, W-O-O-D-S. But that whole song, like, if you're thinking about it, she's saying should, she's saying could. And then because the whole show she's been saying woods, or everyone has been saying woods in that way, you're primed to think of it that way. But as a performer, as an artist, like, interpreting it and saying it maybe in a different way.
The funniest part of that article, too, is that... I don't know if you've ever read any, like, Seth Playbill articles before, but he kind of writes as if it's, like, a diary entry.
Yeah.
After he, like, found out that that's what the conversation was about, he was like, who has the energy / intellect to write on so many different levels? Hashtag not me.
Truly, no. Actually, that's one of those songs, like, Moments in the Woods is gorgeous, but that's in the book. There's a passage that Stephen Sondheim wrote that's in Look, I Made a Hat right after Moments in the Woods, but it's kind of a comment on it. And I want to read a few bits of it because I think it's very interesting. So he starts out by saying, one of the many reasons that I would have made a bad director is that I have a limited tolerance for actors who can't resist suggesting changes in the script. It is problematic enough that some of them change lines and lyrics unintentionally, their ears for grammar and rhythm being defective. But their overview of the piece, more often than not, is bounded by the perspective of the characters they play. Good for characterization, bad for the small nuances and large shape. Which is so interesting because I think about this a long time. I mean, this is a tangent, but I think back to when we interviewed Jake Epstein, and he felt such responsibility for Jerry Goffin and having to represent him. And he was kind of his only advocate in that room. But everyone else, or the directors and the writers, are advocating for the story as a whole. And like, that's Stephen Sondheim's job. And each actor's job is to advocate for their own character. So I think it's funny that he just kind of insults all actors and performers there.
Well, but he literally said, just to interrupt you for a second, in that exact same breath, when he was talking about the witch's song in the second act. I can't remember what it's called. Children will listen. Yes, Children Will Listen. He was saying that song. Bernadette always dropped an extra and he was like, this is how it's written, but she couldn't enunciate it that way when she was singing, so she would always drop an and. So it's very, he said it out loud, he wrote about it in his book. He was like, I know it's not anything to be like upset about, but clearly he's upset about it.
he crafts these lyrics so intentionally, and so when performers don't like understand that, he's like, what's the point? So he says he doesn't really like when actors suggest things. So he says, only once in my experience has an actor said something that I immediately latched onto, not only a good notion for a lyric line, but also an insight into a character that hadn't occurred to me. It came from Joanna Gleason, who played the baker's wife, and who in a late night conversation about the character noted in passing that she felt like she was in the wrong story. And so I feel like that was like a light bulb moment for him, because these are the only original characters in this musical. They're kind of like thrust into the show. And that ends up being a lyric in Moments in the Woods. She says, I'm in the wrong story. Like, how did I get here? What am I doing here? And also that these characters, the baker and the baker's wife, are kind of audience proxies. They're much more contemporary characters than anyone else in there. And kind of like him like outlining that, like, gave me a new perspective on the baker and the baker's wife. Like, we as children, we hear these stories from when we're very, very young, like talk about the finale, like the song is called Children Will Listen, like, careful the things you say, careful the stories that you tell them, these fairy tales, like, children will listen, children will be impacted by them. And so these are the stories that everyone grew up with. And what happens when you, let's say, are thrust into these fairy tale stories, or when you, as like a regular person, want to be in these fairy tale stories, like, want to insert yourself or start to believe that the things that happen in these fairy tale stories, like, could be real. And you, like the baker's wife here is so confused by this prince who has come onto her in the woods. She's kind of in this like in between state. And it's just, I don't know, the crafting of this story is so, it's so good.
Because everything is so intentional. I think it's also funny when we think about it, because, like, when you think about fairy tales sometimes and how you think that every fairy tale has a happy ending, we're talking about, these ones are based off of the Grimm's fairy tales. And those ones, I think, are known to be, like, quite dark. So to play into that darkness is so interesting, not so much in Act 1, definitely in Act 2, but I also think that that has a lot to do with, like, exactly why the music changes the way that it does. You keep that, like, uplifting fairy tale sounding because, like, everything is so happy. They're getting everything that they wish for. But then when we get to the darkness of Act 2, it's like, okay, well, now I got to change the everything about it. I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, Sondheim, you create so much hard work for yourself. Like, if you just decided to keep the storyline as is, your score would just be, like, nicely laid out for you, but instead he's like, I gotta do a fairy tale upbeat in the first act and, like, the darkest show ever in Act 2, and change all the lyrics, change all of the, like, motifs, like, all of the themes now have to sound so different because death is involved. So
it's quite interesting because they're based on these fairy tales that are quite dark, but when they're told to children when you're young, most of the darkness is taken out of them. So any of the kind of downsides to any of the actions that the characters are taken is taken out when they're told to children. So children are not seeing the full story. They're only seeing the positive elements of it, which kind of, like, when you think about it, it does, like, the stories that you hear when you're young shape your worldview, shape the way that you move through the world. And so if we're telling children these stories, but only telling them the good parts and not telling them the bad parts, like, are you preparing, this is a half-formed thought, but, like, are you preparing, like, are you truly preparing children to be able to move through the world, go through the world? And especially, like, this show is so much about being a parent, like, parenthood. Like, the baker and the baker's wife want to be parents so bad. Jack and his mother and their relationship, the witch and her daughter Rapunzel, or is it even her daughter? Like, she's, like, stolen this child. I don't even know. And, like, the relationship there. And it's so much about, like, that parental relationship and trying to be a good parent, like, and the baker at the end is like, how will I be a good, I don't know how to be a parent. And it's just like, you just do it. I don't know. These are half formed thoughts, but there's like, there's so much in there to like delve into.
Yeah. There's so many, like themes that this show covers. Like, obviously we've said, like growing up, being a parent, like responsibility. But then I think one of the most interesting ones is like consequences, because everything that they wish for ends up having a consequence at the end. And there's a line, I think it's, I can't remember what song it is. I think it's at the, like, towards the very end of the show, about like, you need to act, you need to think, like, you need to do all of these things in order for like your consequences to not end up the way that these do. And whether it be you get crushed by a giant, or you get like squeezed by a giant, or whatever it might be, like, yes, we're still living in this fairy tale world, but to end your show by having your audience think about like everything that you might have done in your life could have a consequence is like kind of dark, but also, I don't know, like, so interesting. It's a show that like leaves you thinking at the end, which I think is important, because not you might not think that when you think of like fairy tales. But also, it's what you were saying about like the fairy tales and the way that like we grow up and whatever. I think it's different now. I think it's a bit different now because there's so much been exposed since like we were read a fairy tale book 20 however many years ago, right? Like, with commentary on social media these days, and then thinking about like all of the Disney fairy tale stories that are actually maybe like kind of terrible when you think about them. I don't know. It's so interesting to like think that this show, which was on Broadway in 1987, is probably like just as relevant in 2022 as it was then.
That's I think another sign of like wonderful art, is that like the longer it lives, like the more and more relevant it becomes to the audience that's consuming it, that you can like reinterpret it and see it from different perspectives and different times in your life and different times in the world, and it still has that like same or even stronger impact than it did that first time.
It's also interesting to think, when you think about all of these themes and like consequences and everything, like maybe the witch, who is supposed to be like a terrible character, is the one that had it right the entire time. Like, she has a line in the show where she says, "I'm not good, I'm not nice, I'm just right." She's one of the only people that like tells it like it is, because she has lived more life than them, maybe, or because she's had several consequences already happened to her. It's kind of like she gives them a warning off the top that if you don't follow the rules, that it's going to end badly for you. And for almost all of the characters, it ends badly for them.
Yes, like, so often, like, we're so committed to things being right or wrong or good or bad, especially in fairy tales. It's very much like there's a hero and there's a villain. But then when you kind of expand your worldview, you know, when you read a fairy tale like story, you're very focused on these like two characters and you're hearing it from one perspective. But when you expand your worldview to include all the different characters, you are seeing, oh, it wasn't quite so simple as that. Like, for example, Jack, you know, he went up to he planted the bean, he climbed up the beanstalk. I can't remember what he did up there, came down, but he disrupted their lives up there. He killed the giant. He disrupted their lives. And for when you're reading Jack and the Beanstalk, you're like, yeah, the giant's evil and Jack is the good guy. But, you know, he was a husband. He had children. He is the giant was the main character in his own story. And for Jack and the Beanstalk, the way it ends normally, he just kills a guy and it's like happily ever after. And it's like, oh no, what?
Yeah.
There's more to that. There's absolutely more to that. And for me, like, when I read a book or watch a movie, let's say, and it ends all the time with, like, they kiss or they get married and it's, like, happily ever after. But I'm like, but you know what the interesting part is? These people, like, trying to live their lives, like, continuing to try and live their lives. Like, after they kiss, or now they're in a relationship, or now they're married, it's like, okay, but there's like a whole onslaught of like more interesting and more complicated questions now that come up that I think are so much more interesting. And I think like the second act trying to explore, okay, what happens after you marry the prince? You know,
you had the baby.
You had the baby that you wanted so badly, but now you have to raise a child. It's not just like the baby is here. Now you have to raise this child, like, it's a completely different thing. Like, you don't think about the consequences of getting that happily ever after, and if it's actually what you want, you're so, like, single-mindedly focused.
Yeah. I say that the witch might be the only one that has, like, the correct perspective, but I think Cinderella also has the correct perspective, which is maybe why we like her the best in this characterization, because she's kind of, like, voice of reason.
I love her agency. There's another kind of passage. I don't know if I'll be able to find it here, but there's another kind of passage that Stephen Sondheim wrote in here, basically being like, it never made sense why Cinderella, like, didn't want to be found, basically. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't she stay? Because, like,
at the ball, you're saying, right?
Yeah, like she has to leave, but why wouldn't she reveal herself to the prince? It's like, oh, being a permanent slave or being a princess, like, why is this a hard decision, you know? But here it's like, she's like, Stephen Sondheim said, James Lapine kind of solved this by having her leave the shoe behind and let it be the prince's choice, being like, I don't want you to just love me for who you think I am. I want you to find me, and I want you to know who I really am. Like, I don't want to deceive you. Mm-hmm. I want you to find who I really am. And he's like, I feel like that, like, kind of solves Cinderella's whole thing, like, giving her that agency of saying, I'm going to leave this shoe behind, and kind of makes her, I think, a more modern Cinderella than other Cinderella adaptations that we see.
Yeah. It's also in that song, I can't remember what the song is, but when she's singing with the baker's wife and she's describing the ball, and it's the, like, he's a very nice prince, like, that moment. And the baker's wife is like, and like, she wants more. She wants to know, like, why the prince is so great. And Cinderella's like, it's not about the prince. Like, it's about everything else. So that, like, rings true.
She's like,
that.
I want love. She's like, I want love.
Like, who cares if he's handsome?
The baker's wife, like, obviously this kind of proves to be her downfall a little bit, but she wants this baby with her husband, but then also she can't help but be enthralled by this fairy tale of the prince.
Yeah.
And then when she meets the prince herself, she's kind of like, oh no, what's going on here? Like, she has this, like, she has what she always wanted, and yet she's still pulled by the fairy tale prince that she's been told stories of from her entire life, that she's always wanted to see or always wanted to know, which is very different from her baker husband, who are her normal husband. And then the woods also kind of confuse everyone.
The other thing that I wanted to mention about the lyrics is, the songs, is the way that sometimes the lyrics are presented. And even in scripting choices, the way that lyrics are presented, everything is almost kind of presented in a rhyme. It's very, like, I don't know the word. There's a word for it. It's not staccato. Staccato is, like, kind of the word for the music, but it's, like, syncopated, I think, is the way that they're speaking. Mm-hmm. It's all in rhyme all the time. And specifically, like, in Act 1, I think it's like that a lot, but I think it's obviously intentional. And the reason I want to say is because, like, when you hear it in the rhyme, it takes you back to the way when you were read these stories as kids and the rhymes of all of these fairy tales. So I think it's all kind of, like, brought back together. I don't know. I think the more that you, like, think about the actual, like, interworkings of this musical, the, like, smarter and smarter and smarter it seems.
Yes. Like, so I saw this on a Friday night, and then on Saturday night I went to see Company. So it was, like, Sondheim back to back. And these are musicals, you know, written almost 20 years apart. And I was with my mom, who was, like, not as familiar with these shows. And so the first night we saw Into the Woods, she's like, wow, this is amazing. She really loved Act 1. Act 2 she liked less. But I think Act 2 is, like, a little harder. But Act 2 she liked less. And then we were was at intermission at Company. She's like, so it's Stephen Sondheim. Like, he, like, I'm like, yeah, I know. Like,
he did that.
He did that. Like, I think it's, like, really, it was really special to see, like, two of his shows, two completely different shows structurally, written again almost 20 years apart about
I would say though things. Musically, he definitely pulls from himself. The I Wish and the Bobby is very similar sounding.
Yeah. Yes. He loves sounds. Like, obviously but he likes sounds. Like, he likes weird little, like
things that stand out to you as an audience member to be like, oh, I'm interested. Yeah. Gotta keep this going. Yeah.
Yes. It's almost like a it's so good, but, like, even for, like, I told my mom, like, it's written by the same person, even for someone who's not as familiar to be able to kind of immediately recognize that these were written by the same person who has, like, a similar worldview, who is exploring things in the same way, who's writing lyrics as cleverly in the same way, like, the rhyming, the kind of examining of of a topic in the way that is done in both of these shows is like, I think it's like evident to, I think it's like very evident to anyone who sees these that, that like he, like just the cleverness, the genius that is written with these, that he writes these with, or he wrote these with.
So now we've seen two. We're hopefully maybe going to see a third in January.
Like this,
if we don't see it, if we don't see it in January, we're definitely gonna see it at Crow's. So like we will be seeing the third, but like depending on
this year,
but depending on when we go, we might see Sweeney Todd. Like I don't know what's happening. So it's interesting that like you know, as we've said on many episodes, there's been like obviously a Sondheim Renaissance. That's also like Merrily, this version of Merrily at least, and Sweeney Todd are both like post him passing away. So like these are two more now Sondheim productions, in, like plus Into the Woods, that like he hasn't been in the room for. So I don't I have many thoughts on Sweeney Todd that we will not get into here.
I think it's interesting now because I feel like these shows are kind of frozen. Like before he died, I feel like he was willing to make an edit if you pitched one and he liked it. No, I mean he doesn't like pitches, but if he saw something that he wanted to edit, he was willing to edit, he was willing to adapt, like as you see that with that Company Revival.
Yeah,
but now that he's gone, like these shows are frozen in how they are right now.
I do,
or how
think
the like the recent scripting of them.
I do think that,
and this, I think that's interesting.
This Merrily is very traditional to previous productions of Merrily. I don't know,
which is funny because it,
like,
it didn't work the first time. So
no,
so why did it work now? But
because there's a lot of star power in that show. So
no,
it will work.
I mean, I cried watching. I was watching the battles earlier. I was crying because when just like. The final vows when Jonathan Groff and Danny Radcliffe and then Lindsay Mendez comes from the other side and they're just like hugging each other and I'm just like, this is great. Like this is
but
it.
See,
this
that's is another like Company, I would say, like a real life show where I don't think Sweeney Todd is a real life show. So they might be able to take a little bit more liberties on that one, because there's been like a million versions of Sweeney done all over the world.
They can
so
pick and choose from different lyrics that he's maybe put in and
totally
taken out. This book is really interesting because there are cut songs in here. There are, sometimes they'll leave in like a chunk of lyrics that it was cut or is included in a cast recording but doesn't get performed in the show. What I was saying, I was listening to the cast recording earlier and like
today,
following along, and I would say it's pretty exactly
true,
what. What's in here, whereas Company I found a lot a lot of minor changes, a lot of like different lyrics because like it has gone through so many evolutions recently. So I think they can probably pick and choose from different adaptations, different productions that had his approval, but like nothing new can be added to these productions of the show.
That's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, I think like something that was really like a strength of him was that he was willing to evolve and edit as he felt things needed to. And now that those shows aren't able to, I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
This like Merrily, I'm interested to see because the cast recording for me has been very difficult to get through of Merrily.
I
think just because of the structure of it.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
I think I've only picked it up like when we had to type thing.
Yeah. Maybe the answer might be like in this
reading
this book, following along and like just hearing more stories about it, because it's kind of a structurally difficult one because it moves backwards, right? So it's hard to follow. I found anytime I tried to listen to it, I find it hard to follow. So maybe a stage production. We'll definitely be seeing the
Crows.
Yes Theater Sudbury Crows collaboration this spring.
Yeah.
And would love to see the off-Broadway New York City Center's one. I was on TikTok today, actually.
I was going to say, if anyone has been in the cancellation line, please DM us. We are very, very interested
we
in the
know.
Cancellation line. We're also interested
if
you won
the
lottery. Yeah.
If you won the lottery. No, but this was something else about Merrily. So the rumor is the Hudson Theater, but what was recently announced is Jessica Chastain in A Doll's House.
Oh, right, yeah.
In the Hudson Theater. So they're like, oh, what if it's next season? Like, they're like,
someone,
maybe Groff and Danny Radcliffe are not available this spring.
I did also read,
it's going to be pushed.
Someone say that, like, this run will finish and then we'll revisit in 10 months from now. And I was like, what information do you have from in 10 months from now?
In 10 months from now.
Yeah.
When you cast celebrities, when you cast famous people, scheduling is a big issue.
Totally. And I also think there's something about having only one Sondheim show in a revival season this year that they might want instead of...
Right.
Three. Two.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah, it'll be Into the Woods and two. Sweeney.
Yeah, so year. Maybe they want to save...
But they won't be running at the same time. But they won't be running at the same time, at least, so...
No. Well, Sweeney and Marilee could overlap if it were to happen this season.
Yeah, we'll have to see what... We'll have to see what happens. But yeah. Yeah, because there'll be two in this season with Sweeney and Into the Woods.
Yeah, so maybe they would like to save it for a future revival Tony Awards.
Right.
This season is very busy right now. I also feel like it's hard. I was looking at this the other day.
It is, but it also isn't. I don't know. It's not that exciting of a season to me.
No, it's not that exciting of the season, but I think it's very full right now. Like, I'm not sure we're ready to add anything else.
Another revival.
No. We're not adding another jukebox musical. We are next year, but...
Once One More Time. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
There are two places on Broadway where you can hear... Actually, there are many places on Broadway where you can hear Baby One More Time, Stronger, Toxic. You can hear Toxic at two places.
You're right.
And you're Britney, something else. Someone was like, I saw something recently. We were now like very off track. But I saw something recently of like, congrats to Max Martin on this season of Broadway and next season of Broadway.
Max Martin. He's the talent. The talent jumped out.
Yeah.
The talent jumped out. Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah. What are your final thoughts on Into
What are my final thoughts? Honestly,
do you have a favorite song for your final thought?
I do have a favorite song. Actually, that's a great question. My favorite song is Stay With Me that the witch sings to Rapunzel. Mm-hmm. I just love the like melody of it, and then kind of when she goes back, I think it's like Witch's Lament in Act Two, which is like the same melody and kind of like revisiting that moment. There's a lyric in it that I highlighted later that I wanted to like say later. So it's in Lament, and it's at the end of the song, and she says, she's talking about like Rapunzel, who is her child. It says, guide them along the way. Still, they won't listen. Children can only grow from something you love to something you lose. And I think that's like a really interesting encapsulation of like what it's like to be a parent, because like when you have a baby, like we're not parents, but I imagine what it's like to be a parent is you have this baby and they're like yours only. And then you raise them and then you're like, goodbye. Or like you put them out into the world and you still think like as a parent, you probably still think of them as like your child only, but they don't belong to you anymore. Like they are like the world's now. And I think that's like such an interesting relationship, because like it'll never be an equal relationship. Like a parent will like always like be obsessed with their child more than a child will feel that way to their parents, like rightfully, like except no matter how much you love your parents.
Except for when you're like a baby, and like exactly. You're obsessed,
and you rely
with your
on them for life.
Everything.
You rely on them for life.
No, it's so true. I was listening to a podcast about this kind of recently, of like, someone was talking about this and how sad it is for a parent, because like when your kid reaches a certain stage, and it's like very early, probably like as soon as they become a toddler, like they don't need you as much as they did when they were like an infant. So you'll never get that feeling again.
It's also a sign that like you're doing a good job if your child does not need you. So like if you're being a good parent, then your child does not need you as much, but it's also probably like devastating for a parent to like have to let go in that way.
Right. You would hope that your child who is like at the age of 50 doesn't need you the way that they did when they were an infant.
Right.
Maybe.
Yes. But and so like I think that like encapsulated like the show, like to me, like so much of it is about parenthood and like being and like your relationship with your parents, like Rapunzel and the witch, and like Cinderella, her stepmother, her father who is
and her real
dead.
Mother.
Yeah, her real mother, she visits her mother's grave. You know, the baker and his wife, like, trying to become a child. Like, Jack and his mom, you know, and their relationship, too.
Even, like, the Little baker's Red and her
father.
Grandmother.
Whose grandmother?
Little Red and the grandmother. Like,
right, exactly.
Kind of
like, so much, like, that parental relationship. And I, like kind of the witch's, like, relationship with Rapunzel and, like, these songs that she sings. So yes, my favorite songs is where we got to this are Stay With Me and like Lament. I love like just like the beautiful like lyricism of that.
No matter what you say,
children won't listen. No matter what you know, children refuse to learn. Guide them along the way, still they won't listen. Children can only grow from something you love to something you lose.
And then I always cry when we hear No One Is Alone.
I was going to say, that's my favorite song. I mean, there are moments, but I think, like, as a whole, like, lyrics and orchestrations, it's just, like, what a way to end your show with that song.
Yes.
And I guess, like, what a way to wrap up this whole episode with No One Is Alone.
Mother isn't here now.
Wrong things, right things.
Who knows what she'd say?
Who can say what's
Nothing's
true?
Nothing's quite so clear now.
Do things, fight things.
Feel you've lost your way.
You decide, but you are not alone.
Believe me, no one is alone.
No one is alone, believe.
You move just a finger, say the slightest word.
Something's bound to linger, be heard. No one acts alone, careful.
It takes two?
No one.
It takes two.
I love It Takes Two.
Just like the way there's so much good layering. Like, a lot of in here, it'll say in canon, because like, they're like layering, like, multiple anyway, so good. Doesn't matter.
So
yeah.
Good. anyway, are we gonna rate it?
Oh my goodness. Yes. Oh, great question. What should my rating scale be? So I guess I'm gonna give this 5 out of 5 golden shoes. Like, I don't know.
Oh, golden shoes. I'm gonna give it 5 out of 5 Milky Whites.
Milky Whites. Oh, Milky Whites' deaths, specifically.
Yeah, specifically. Actually, maybe just Kennedy's face is Kennedy. The 5 out of 5. Just the expression. There's an amazing video of when they were recording the cast recording, and it ends with, like, Kennedy coughing as Milky White, and I've never seen someone put so much face into a cough in their life. So
in the studio.
Really,
in the
recording. Really just serving everything that we wanted and more. But yes, amazing. As we said at the beginning of this episode, Into the Woods closes at the St. James on Broadway on January 8th. So if you're in the New York area, make sure you see it. And if Into the Woods is playing anywhere, like in your city, wherever you're listening, go see it, because I really want to see another version of this show. So I'd be interested to know what's out there in the world.
In the woods. In the woods.
In the woods. What's out there in the woods? And with that being said, it is now time for our obsession of the week.
Okay, so my obsession, Tara, you and I, we share a TikTok account, and we're always talking about what we're seeing on TikTok. And something that I have been absolutely bombarded by on TikTok is the little girl in the red beret in Matilda.
Oh my God, I thought you were going to say Matt Healy in the 1975.
That too. That needs to stop. But no, absolutely, that like 1 minute of choreography by the little girl in the red beret to Revolting Children in Matilda. And
is maybe the greatest thing that came out of 2022.
I'm literally absolutely obsessed with it. It is so good. That girl is serving more than anyone else has ever served in their entire life. Like, she's amazing.
And she's what? Like 12? 10, 13? 12?
I don't know. 10? Just like the moment where she's like, looks
yeah, the
out.
Little
like,
bit
I
naughty.
Can't.
Yeah.
I can't get over it. She's so good. And it gives me so much like positive feeling. This movie has not come out yet. It comes out on Christmas Day.
Well, if you're listening to us in the UK, it is in theaters right now. And for some reason, it's not going to Netflix in UK and Ireland until summer 2023. So, like, go see it in theaters if you have the chance. Yeah, because we don't get it till Christmas here.
Christmas Day. We get it Christmas Day here in North America on Netflix. So I was kind of indifferent to this movie before.
Until
this. But now that I've seen this clip, I'm like, I will be there Christmas Day. Like, play
also,
on Netflix.
Also, the kid that is playing Bruce.
Bruce
obsessed
is
with
so
him.
Tiny. So
obsessed
tiny.
With him. Just like, I know.
It has this, like, frenetic energy that I think is, like, so important to Matilda that I'm so happy that the movie didn't, like, polish and stamp out. It has this, like, wildness that I think
but
is so Matilda. I'm so excited.
like, not to say that we didn't enjoy the stage show, because we definitely did, but to me, this one minute and 30 second clip is like what I wanted the stage show to be.
Right.
Which we never say that about movies. Musicals. I do think that we might be about to see the best musical to movie adaptation maybe ever to exist right now. I don't know.
Wow, crazy.
Musical to movie. I don't know that we've right. seen any like really good musical to movie adaptations.
Yeah. It's always hard.
Yet.
But
not Dear Evan Hansen. Not The Prom.
There is something kind of cinematic about the Matilda musical in general, specifically, you know, her stories, like her kind of like the storytelling and the way that maybe they'll be able to do that in a really interesting way. I actually have no idea. I don't even know if I've seen the trailer. I don't think I have.
The trailer
have
is amazing.
Clip. I've seen this
the
one
first time
clip.
I saw the trailer was when I thought like, oh man, we're about to get something that's really special here.
Maybe I did
and
see
like,
it.
I don't know that we've felt that way in a long time. Not since like Tick, Tick, Boom.
Tick, Tick, Boom.
Tick, Tick, Boom was a great musical tick, movie adaptation.
I actually forgot about that one. That one was great. remember, not to go back to Merrily, but remember when the Deux Mois rumor was that Andrew Garfield was going to be in Merrily, and then him and Lynn went to see Merrily and took a picture with Groff. Amazing.
I know.
Yeah, so this is this 1 minute clip of the little girl in the red beret singing Revolting Children in the school has brought me life. I've seen 8 million people react to it on TikTok, recreate the choreography, put on the red beret.
That Missy Elliott video that I sent you is
yes.
actually insane.
They put, like, lose control over it, and it worked perfectly. Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to say about Matilda is that they have brought, like, the creative team from the musical side to work on this, and good for you, because that helps.
That's what I wanted to shout out the choreographer. Ellen Kane, who worked with choreographer Peter Darling on the stage production, choreographed the movie, and I think, one, that's so important, but also, the choreography is very different. It has that, like, frenetic kid energy, that, like, wildness that I was saying before, but it is, like, much more modern choreography, it seems like. So that...
But
really
I do know that Tim Minchin is very involved in this movie,
good.
Which is a great thing.
Good.
Yeah.
I love that. I absolutely
remember
love
remember when
that.
We were about to get Ralph Fiennes as Trunchbull, and now we're getting Emma Thompson?
You know what?
A great choice. A great switch.
I think that is a great choice. I think that is a good choice. I think, when they first announced that, I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this because it's traditionally played by a man. But, you know, now that we have, with the perspective of time,
yeah.
I think, like, the... As we've said many times, the joke of man in a dress is just so much less funny. So much less funny.
Although, I think we might be wrong about Some Like It Hot. I think it might be good.
I'm willing to see it. But, yeah, I think, like, the gag, like, the using humor or mining humor out of, look at this man, he's in a dress. That Matilda does. I think removing that from the movie is a good idea.
Yeah. I just think about too that like there are maybe some kids that have never seen the original Matilda movie will be seeing like this musical.
This will
as,
be
like,
their Matilda.
Yeah, isn't that crazy to think?
It is funny. It is crazy.
That movie is so like ingrained in my memory because I watched it so many times as a kid.
Do you think Danny DeVito is in this one?
No, I don't. Because the interpretation of Mr. Wormwood is, like, very, very different. Before we go to my obsession...
Gabriel Ebert being 700 feet tall.
Yeah. I just wanted to say about the girl with the beret. She posted a video of herself in, like, 2022 dancing to it. So she's older now because they filmed that, like, a couple years ago. And then also Leslie Margarita reacted to it on TikTok the other day, the original Mrs. Wormwood on Broadway. And she was like, this is making me so emotional to see that these kids are, like, this is exactly what you want to see. It's, I don't know. I think they did a really, I mean, we haven't seen it yet, but from what we've seen so far, I think they've done a really good job, like, moving it from
Revolting
from
Children
to,
is life in general. That song is absolutely amazing. So, can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your obsession,
Tara? My obsession this week, this is like kind of dates back to, and also can't believe that I'm saying this on the podcast, but like, actually we've said it on the podcast before, we are big Dancing with the Stars fans on this podcast, and I want to talk about the finale of Dancing with the Stars. No, Dancing with the Stars is not my obsession, but it was this dance that led me to my obsession. Steph, have you seen the finale yet or no?
No.
Oh my God, I can't believe you still haven't seen the finale.
Watch the last 10 minutes for Gleb, but go on.
Oh yeah, right, because I texted you to be like, Gleb's in drag, and then you turned it on immediately. So Charlie D'Amelio, wow, TikTok really has been this entire episode. Won Dancing with the Stars this season. Like, we knew as soon as she entered the competition that she was going to win. But her freestyle, which I really appreciated, was it was for her and Mark to, like, rediscover their love of dance, because both of them have talked about, like, Mark Ballas, who I love as a pro on Dance with the Stars, has not been in the season for 5 years because he fell out of love with dance. Now, him entering the season to possibly just win with Charlie and never to return again is a whole other story. We're going to not talk about that aspect of it. But to hear them talk about how they both fell out of love with dance and how it was something that they, like, didn't want to do anymore because they didn't feel inspired was so interesting to listen to. And then Mark choreographed this, like, beautiful dance to this song from this short called Us Again. And that is my obsession of the week. Oh, wow. Us Again is a Disney short. It was attached to Raya and the Last Dragon, which I have not seen that movie. But the short is on Disney Plus in their, like, shorts section. And the entire short is a story told through dance to this one song. It's about a couple that they're older now, and then, like, when it rains, they become younger versions of themselves, and we see their entire love story play out just through dance. And they kind of took inspiration, I would say Mark took inspiration from the short to show off the dance style, but to just, like, watch, I don't know, there's something, like, so beautiful of seeing something, and whether it be animated or not, of literal silence, but you're watching, like, people fall in love, like, just through an art form. And I feel like it's very, like, relatable to when we talk about theater that I loved. So my obsession this week is this Disney short, but also watch their freestyle on Dance with the Stars, because it's so great. The song is, like, really amazing. It's like La La Land-esque. It sounds very much like that. I think it takes place in Chicago, the short. The animation is also, sometimes when I watch these things, I'm like, you guys really animated all this for 6 minutes of screen time? Like, crazy. The Disney animators are truly maybe some of the most talented people in the world. So yeah, that's my obsession this week. Plus, like, I guess my obsession is also, like, Red Beret Girl, because we've been talking about it for literally, like, a month and a half. Ever Love since Red that Bird video Girl. Came out.
So good.
And yeah, that's our episode on Into the Woods. Our next episode is our final episode of the year. It's our year in review. And so interesting to think that this year in review will actually feature true live performances that we've seen. Because we actually saw a lot in 2022. Yeah. Both of us went to New York this year. We saw a lot in Toronto. And I think I can speak for both you and I, but one of our favorite performances was in Toronto this year. So
absolutely, you'll have to wait. I'm thinking of two Toronto productions right now that I absolutely loved.
I'm thinking of two different
Toronto productions.
Was one, like, early in the year?
One was earlier in the year, and one was more recent. I'll tell you after, so we don't spoil our year in review.
Yeah, but that's not always the case of, like, loving something so much in your own city. So there's a lot of good stuff that's out there. And we're continuing to see theater all the way through till next year. We just found out that Rock of Ages is playing in Toronto in February, and we will absolutely be
going. Based on a wild TikTok ad that you got that we then had to Google.
I was fed a sponsored TikTok for Rock of Ages in Toronto. Speaking of,
you said to me, you were like, what is this? And I was like, what is this? So we'll be there.
Yeah. If we'll be counting down our favorite moments from this year, as we do every year, and also our favorite bloopers from this year. There were not as many as previous years, I feel like, but, you know, always a good time.
We're professionals recording. Now. We're experienced. We know what to do.
Exactly. And also, I wanted to say, because we just were served in the last, like, 2 weeks, our Spotify podcast Wrapped. Thanks to everyone for listening. We did kind of mention this on our 100th episode, like, if you've been there from the beginning or if you just started to tune in. But, like, to know that we've been listened to in 31 countries is absolutely wild to me. So thanks for all the continued support. It's really crazy to see stats like that.
It's funny. Sometimes I forget we're just not just hanging out, and people I know. Actually listen to this after.
To know that, like, what was it, like, I don't, like, over 1,000 minutes of us have been listened to across the world is So sorry well, that
we,
to everybody.
We put out over 1,000 minutes. Who knows how many people, who knows how much we'd actually listen to, but we put out over 1,000 minutes, which...
Yeah. I know. So yeah, we'll be diving more into that stuff in our year in review episode. I can't believe that it's December. I can't believe that it's been a full year. And yeah, we're excited about what's to come next year. So before you listen to our year in review episode, make sure you listen to all of our other episodes. And you can do that by subscribing to our podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'd really appreciate it if you left us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe to us here on YouTube.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Off to Be Away Podcast with the number 2 and tell us what your favorite things are that you saw this year so we can add them to our year in review.
And we'll see you next time for our final episode of the year.
Bye.